And you are listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming live at WPKN.org. This is In Context. Take it away, Gus.
Hi, welcome out there. Happy Monday, everybody. This is In Context, WPKN's public affairs call-in show. My name is Gus Cantavero, and I'm here with my co-host, Ken McDermott Rowe.
Hello, everybody.
With the extra deep voice today.
Thanks to hay fever.
And behind the board pulling double duty is Marshand.
Hey, everyone, with the nasally voice from hay fever.
And you can find our website. Of course, the name of the show is In Context, and you can find our website at incontextreport.com, and you can find our YouTube channel by going to youtube.com/incontextreport. And, you can find us on Facebook, and we will alert you as to all the show updates and let you know as to what we're going to be talking about the following week, so that you can get ready to call in and give us your questions. And you can email us as well, your comments and questions during the week as well as during the show, and we'll read them on the air. And our email address is ken@mdrtalk.org. And you can send those comments to us along today, and we'll relay them on air. We have our laptop open here, and we're reading your emails as they come in. They're flying in right now, actually. They're stacking up. Today is our the last show of the month. So every month we do the war report, the monthly war report, which I'm pretty sure we're the only show that does that. Most in the mainstream media just completely ignore everything that goes on around the world, because really all we care about here in America is ourselves, right? Today we're going to be talking about a variety of issues, mostly answering a lot of concerns we had last week. A lot of we were talking last week primarily about how to revive the American industry and economy and rebuild our infrastructure. But a lot of people had questions about a few comments that Marshand had raised about our coastline defenses. And he was talking about our most recent YouTube video. It was a short 5-minute clip just about rebuilding America's defenses, because we are too preoccupied with the wars around the world, as Ron Paul says, the borders between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and not the borders of America here at home, which is our primary concern.
That's right, Gus. Everybody knows we fought wars recently in Libya. We have an ongoing war in Afghanistan, Iraq. We've been there for many years. We have, in fact, troops in about 130 foreign countries, and we have at least 700 overseas military bases. And while we have this tremendous and expensive, far-flung military operations projecting U.S. power around the world, as you'll learn in today's show, we are actually very vulnerable at a military level right back here at home. And one of the areas that Gus referred to is our coastline. So we'd like Marshand, who is an in-context military affairs commentator, if you could start by reviewing our military vulnerabilities here at the home base, the United States, our continental United States, starting with the coastline vulnerability. Could you talk about that, Marshand?
Absolutely. The American coastline is something we always thought was our protection. These wide expanse... I spilled my tea.
I don't know what you're doing over there.
These wide expanses of coastline... Sorry. I'm a klutz. These wide expanses of open coastline, we always thought were traditionally a great defense, because it was always hard for armies to sail a fleet all the way across the Atlantic, or particularly the Pacific, all the way across the Pacific without getting noticed, which was what made the threat of the Japanese land invasion seem rather ludicrous. But now, with the advent of bombers that can fly across the Pacific, hit the United States and fly back without having to refuel over the Pacific, or being able to refuel once they're in Chinese or Russian airspaces, or the fact that ships can now carry whole divisions to our coastline, really negates that advantage. In fact, it makes our open coastlines a vulnerability. We have no coastal defenses, so to speak of. Unlike many, many other countries in the world, where your coastline is recognized as a vulnerability and protected, our coastlines are just wide open landing
zones. Of course,
we
have the Chinese and the Russian submarines have access to getting close to our coastline.
Oh, absolutely. The issue of Russian and Chinese submarines is a very important one as well. The Russians and the Chinese both possess large submarine fleets that carry, not just intercontinental ballistic missiles, but some the size of aircraft carriers that can transport battalion and brigade size elements of troops to our coastline. Now, a lot of people have asked me in the past, what about our sonar nets? Our ability, we can tell what's going on out there. We know every move that the enemy is making. unfortunately, that disappeared during the Cold War. But the problem is, and advantage we had with our sonar nets disappeared at the end of the Cold War. The Russians invested in silent drive technology, which, yes, I know a lot of you are probably thinking that's Tom Clancy, that's The Hunt for October. It was based largely on actual Soviet technology, which the Russians have continued developing, most notably the Typhoon-class submarine.
Yeah, I mean, where does Tom Clancy get his ideas? It comes from real scientific research.
Exactly.
This is not just sci-fi made-up stuff.
Exactly. And you can look this up on Wikipedia. You know, the Typhoon-class submarine was developed during the Cold War. Now, one thing that's interesting to note is our military technology really stagnated at the end of the Cold War, in the sense that we became fascinated with drones and counterinsurgency weapons and technology in that sense. But because we figured that we were now the superpower, we would never, ever, ever, ever fight another superpower. So we haven't invested things like stealth submarine technology. We haven't invested in things like our sonar nets, which are badly in disrepair.
These presumably would detect subs going on our coastline, right?
Precisely. They would be able to detect any and all Russian and Chinese submarines coming up our coastline, presumably. But that's the brilliance of these stealth drives. These stealth drives, which are basically jet propulsion engines underwater, allow a submarine to travel next to silent. And a good example of this comes from the Chosun Ilbo, which is a English-Korean newspaper. And it talks about that China has itself built stealth submarines, and moreover, that the People's Liberation Army Navy, kind of an interesting long name there, People's Liberation Army Navy, was able to get their submarines to within 6 kilometers of a U.S. aircraft carrier. Now, this is really important to note, because no aircraft carrier travels by itself. It's within a huge battle group. So the fact that the Chinese submarine was able to get within 6 kilometers meant it sailed underneath our destroyers, which are designed to detect submarines.
Mm-hmm. And that actually reminds me, remember the Carnival Splendor fire that happened off the coast of San Diego?
Oh, yes.
There was actually a Chinese submarine that was within a couple kilometers of that fire that had happened, and the American battleship that came to investigate took 8 hours to reach the scene. And there was a Chinese submarine there, and there was a missile launch at the scene, but unconfirmed because the Army is so secretive.
There's actually video footage on YouTube you can see of the missile launch. It is clearly the...
And that was probably an EMP.
If you remember that, there were pictures on CNN, and the initial reports was it was a missile, and then our government came out and
from
said,
the Coast Guard, right? They said it was a Coast Guard practice launch or something like that.
And they actually also tried to say it was contrails from an aircraft. Now, I have a fair amount of experience, you know, in this field. I mean, that's why I'm in a military affairs commentator. I've looked at the video footage, and it's a missile. You would never mistake it for anything else.
And it was probably an EMP that fried the electronics on Carnival Splendor, which caused the fire, leaving the ship dead in the water for 2 days.
Absolutely.
So even as we speak, Marshawn, there may be Russian subs based in Venezuela on our east coast.
This is something, again, the American people need to look at, is the fact that the Russians – again, this is all open source, folks. If you doubt what I'm saying, if you don't believe me, that's fine. I encourage you to go on Google. Google this stuff. Google Chinese subs on the U.S. coast. Russian base in Venezuela. You will find the articles. And the Russians built a naval base in Venezuela a couple years ago, the purpose being that during the Cold War, the Russians had to sail their fleet all the way from the Baltic to the U.S. coast and then back again, an incredibly long trip where you burn up most of your supplies and fuel, so you really can't spend a whole lot of time on the U.S. coast. This base in Venezuela allows them to keep virtually a constant 24/7 naval presence on our coast. Now, why don't we tell the American people this? Why aren't we raising the alarm? Why are we still frightened to death of, you know, guys in suicide vests? Because this is real. This is scary, folks. This ability of the Chinese and the Russians to keep submarines on our coast allows them, at a moment's notice, to completely paralyze our entire military, whether it's with EMP bombs, electromagnetic pulse bombs, which were developed during the Cold War. My grandfather worked on them, actually, when he worked for the Department of Defense. He was an electrical engineer, originally for GE and then for the Department of Defense. And he worked with EMP technology. So this is old technology. We just haven't invested in it or in defending ourselves from it.
What would an EMP bomb do? I mean, could it be launched from a submarine, and what would it do?
Basically, what an EMP bomb, it could be launched from a submarine. Pretty much what it is, it's a thermonuclear device. It's a nuclear bomb, but it's detonated in the upper atmosphere. Now, this is brilliant because it doesn't kill large numbers of people. In fact, it doesn't kill anyone. What it does is it sends down a electromagnetic pulse, a sudden rush of electricity down to Earth. And what this does is it fries anything that runs on electronics, even if it's turned off. So things like, let's say your cell phone is off, which is a good example, or your car is off. It suddenly gets hit with this pulse because it conducts electricity. The battery conducts electricity. It suddenly gets hit with this pulse of electricity, which blows or fries the battery, fries the hardware, fries anything that can, that conducts, that basically functions on electricity without affecting humans.
Well, like modern automobiles have onboard computer systems that are always on even when the car is off. So as long as your battery terminal is connected to the car, it will fry the electronics. Whereas a late model car back from like the 70s or early 80s even won't have these onboard computer systems that disable the vehicle. So it's actually left untouched as long as the car is off. But a modern car, you have to take off the battery terminal in order to be protected from this. And it's the same theory as the sun's discharge. But we're protected by, what is it, the ionosphere? Or the I forget which one of the layers of the atmosphere protects us from radiation from the sun. But when you have these coronal mass ejections, CMEs, that are large enough, if you're underneath where the ejection hits, you know, if the sun or if the Earth is facing the sun at the time of the impact from the coronal mass ejection, it will cause GPS to stop working. It could disable satellites. It could knock airplanes out.
It's a beautiful weapon. It's a beautiful because it would paralyze
the country. This detonates beneath the atmosphere,
right?
So we're completely unshielded from all the radiation, and it could actually. It could actually cause cascading blackouts across the country, frying, you know, the transmission lines, so that we're actually left dead in the water for a period of months, not days.
And Gus, the scenario I worry about is we arrogantly say attack Iran, and then which is an ally, has a mutual defense treaty with Russia, and the Russians say, okay, fine, and they lob one of these EMPs from off our coast, hits us in what, 30 minutes?
30 seconds. The brilliance and. You know, people who doubt that this is a possibility, the objective when every major war breaks out is to hit the homeland and paralyze your enemy, knock them out of the fight as early as possible. That's why we had the Doolittle raid on Tokyo. That's why we flatten the German industrial centers in the Ruhr. And that's why we had, in 1944, Operation Market Garden, where we landed troops in Holland, because the idea was we just cross all these bridges in Holland, many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the film A Bridge Too Far, and we would drive right into the Ruhr, and Germany would surrender. That would be it. It would be over by, the war would be over by Christmas. So it is not beyond the realm of possibility. In fact, it's very consistent with history that they would launch a strike. We actually have a caller on the air right now.
Oh, great.
This is Stephen from Bridgeport. Go ahead, Stephen. You're on the air
Stephen.
With PKN.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, no, thank you. I enjoy listening to PKN all the time, and I always enjoy the alternative views here. And I have to agree with just about everything this gentleman says, really. But my real concern of what you say is where have you been for 40 years? Everything you're saying is old news. It really is.
Right, right.
I mean, you're scaring the hell out of people thinking that we don't have any defenses, and that's completely untrue. That's so completely untrue. First of all, you need to study a little more and think about a thing called the Soyuz net. We know everything that moves in the water in the Atlantic Ocean. Nothing moves or flies over the Atlantic without us hearing it. Doesn't happen. Okay? First of all, and second of all, today's modern U.S. subs, one or two sitting in the Atlantic or the Pacific can target anything. Anything.
Anything.
I mean, come on.
Anything.
But you really need to really study up a little more and stop scaring the hell out of people.
Well,
first of all, you are just as guilty as this so-called war on terrorism for scaring the hell out of people unnecessarily. And let me finish.
Right,
yes,
sure,
these
Steven.
Subs may be off our coast. They know we're there. We know they know they're there. Okay? It's the way it's played.
Well,
and there's no reason for the public to know. Because knowing doesn't change it.
Well, you know, Stephen, I think it's... You make some very interesting points, and I think it's very important that we address this, because a lot of people have said this to me, but the fact is my sources are from military sources. I mean, if you look into the articles from the Army Times, the Navy Times, it's the military that's saying a lot of this, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's our... What you consider our strategy for the contemporary operating environment. America's always prepared to fight the last war. And in this case, we have been preparing since the 1990s to fight insurgencies against Afghans, against the Iraqis, insurgencies in Somalia, insurgencies in the 2003 Gulf War, insurgencies in Afghanistan. And so our entire strategy has been centered since the end of the Cold War around fighting countries that don't possess submarines, that don't possess stealth technology.
Kony,
so that's
2012,
why.
We're in Central African Republic.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, a lot of this technology is old news. in many ways, it was developed in the 70s and 80s. But the thing is, militarily, we have stagnated. I mean,
Marshawn, why don't you address this whole question of submarines versus aircraft carriers and how that may represent a paradigm shift that's leaving the United States
behind? Hold on a second, though. One of the things that was alluded to in the call is that we're up to speed on our submarine technology, and that's just not true. We've gone away from submarine technology in the past 20 years, saying that it's a dinosaur that we don't need anymore. And I actually heard a high-ranking a nuclear submarine scientist on NPR, he wrote a book recently and saying how it's a waste of money to be spending money on submarine technology because it's in the past and it's not useful anymore.
Exactly.
We do not have the top-level submarine technology anymore. The Russians and Chinese are far and away better than us in submarine technology, and we can't detect their next level of technology.
Exactly. And a lot of it is because in the 1990s, there's a great book called The Rise of the Chinese Military. I recommend you go on Amazon, look it up. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal book, and I'm trying to remember the author's name, but I will put that out once I can find it. But the author talked about how in 1991, the Russians and the Chinese woke up to our military capabilities because they saw what we did to Saddam's army. And Saddam had, at the time, some of the latest in Chinese air defenses, and we flattened him. So the Chinese, under Deng Xiaoping, said, oh my gosh, we got to play catch up to these guys. So the Chinese started investing in stealth technology. The new Chinese fifth generation fighter, the J-20, the Russian Sukhoi T-50, you know, these are all stealth aircraft that can compete or are better, I've read the schematics, than our F-22, which is our latest and greatest stealth fighter. So, and they can produce them in mass. That's the scary thing. They can produce them in mass. For every F-22 we produce, the Chinese can produce 10 of the J-20s.
Yeah, let's not forget that they have slave labor, and we have to pay Grumman or Boeing, you know, tens of millions of dollars by comparison for these contracts.
But as Marshawn said, we are preoccupied with these wars against really third-rate military powers in order to secure pipeline routes and oil resources
which,
and whatnot.
Which is also why, you know, getting back to what you were saying about the aircraft carriers, which is also why we invest so heavily in aircraft carriers and not enough in submarines. Aircraft carriers are great if you're fighting insurgencies because you can sail an aircraft carrier up off the coast of Pakistan and pummel Afghanistan. But in terms of actual naval combat, the aircraft carrier is anachronistic, and that's what these Chinese sorties have proved. That's what the Russian naval strategists have proved. A submarine going under the water, it can sink an aircraft carrier. You don't need aircraft carriers anymore to fly across the ocean because we have fuel tankers that can do the exact same thing. But the submarine traveling underwater, especially now the new Russian ones can get to these insane depths because our submarines can't go quite as deep because, again, most of our submarines were built in the 70s. There's newer submarines can get at such great depths, we don't see them coming. And they can, like I say, the Chinese especially have ones that can land brigade-size elements on our coast, establish a beachhead. Whether they would do it or not is another story.
Marshawn, let me just give out the phone number in case some people want to participate in this conversation. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5. We're above WPKN's live public affairs call-in show, and the call-in number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. Or you can drop us an email at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. We get your email right away on our laptops here so we can read your question or your comment. And we're talking about America's military vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and I have a point to make about whether it's better for us to just bury our heads in the sand and not know. You know, callers out there, if you're listening and you don't want to know about this, please call us right now and tell us that you don't want to know what our weaknesses are. And remember, 203-336-9756. Call us and tell us that you would rather not know that we're actually left completely wide open because our entire army is in the Middle East invading countries who have no more than AK-47s and rocks to throw.
Well, and even at that, you know, the armies with AK-47s and rocks are doing a lot of damage.
Exactly. That's the whole point. Our army is outfitted with all of this high-quality million-dollar equipment. But at the same time, we can't even we can't even do what we plan to do, which is force somebody to want our form of government, or not even our form, some other form of government. But it's a joke. I mean, we're left wide open. I want to know. I want the soldiers back here protecting us, because we're stirring up a hornet's nest. They all have mutual defense treaties with each other.
That's
and
right.
if we actually elevate the war with Syria and Iran and we bring it to them, they're going to hit us here.
That's right.
And I don't even support the war to begin with. So why should my quality of life be bombed back to the Stone Age because some other jerks out there are trying to force our way of living?
That's what makes this conversation about the home defense so important, because as we get closer and closer to the vital interests of Russia and China, they may hit back, and we might find ourselves in a
And that's what the whole point of them having submarines off our shore is about, to prove to us that we're left wide open. And they know that the American government is practicing subterfuge, not telling us the truth. They don't want us to know, and like the caller said, we're terrorists because we're telling people that we're wide open for attack. Now, sorry, I disagree. I'd rather know what my danger is so that I can take precautions.
Exactly. This isn't defeatism. We're not trying to tell you, oh, look at what a terrible shape our country is. No, we're here to tell you we're vulnerable, you should be scared, and you should try to do something to fix this. Well, we should bring the troops home. We should improve our defenses. We should put troops on the border. We should build coastal defenses. We should build bunkers, and we should build air defense systems. Protect the homeland. Because how can we be expected to protect Iraqis and Afghanis from each other when we can't protect ourselves?
Could you expand a little on that, the borders issue?
Well, the borders issue I find very, very fascinating. The fact that our borders are incredibly porous, you know, and right now we're concerned with, you know, illegal immigrants coming across the border and all the rest of it, but it's more than just that. I read in my day the KGB training manual. It was translated into English, a phenomenal read if you ever get the chance.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I think we have a caller here. We'll resume that in just a moment, but I believe we have a caller coming on the line.
And
of course, our border is pretty porous. You know, you get into the whole immigration issue, which is a really hot one, and we are a country of immigrants, so understandably, people feel very strongly about that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller now, Marshall?
Yeah, just give him a second.
Sorry about that.
As I said in the beginning, he's pulling double duty behind the board. So just be patient with us here.
All right, this is Bill calling from Planet Earth. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hey, Bill, that's it.
An undisclosed location.
Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
So, you know, while you're obsessed with the possibility that they could bring a submarine right up to our coast, now how many people are in a brigade?
A brigade consists of, a company, battalion, brigade.
Maybe. They vary. It could be a couple thousand.
What's the point, Colin?
What's your question, Colin?
Well, you drop a couple of thousand people on our shore, and how long is it before, you know, the entire, you know, military establishment in Washington knows that a couple of thousand Chinese landed on our shore, and how long is it before we
say... Does it have to be a full occupation invasion, or can it just be some spies that come in to bomb up our jam?
That's another issue that I'll address in a moment.
But
the caller, you make a very actually good point, but that's one of the reasons why it's all encompassing. A good example would be the Israelis in the 1967 war, the Six-Day War. The first thing they did is they took out the communications networks of the Egyptians, the Syrians, and the Jordanians. So I think what the Chinese would have to rely on before they landed troops, or as they landed troops, if they launched an EMP strike, or if they knocked out our communications, or it snuck agents in across our border to commit acts of sabotage to destroy our communications networks. Our communication network is very vulnerable because none of it is hardened against EMPs. It's very out in the open, so it's very vulnerable to sabotage. There's no security around much of our communication sites, cell phone towers and our electrical grid. So if they were to sabotage that, it would be very difficult for the military to respond because there'd be such confusion. In fact, the only two sites in the United States hardened against an EMP attack is the White House and the Pentagon. So they could communicate with each other, but no one else in the rest of the
country. Bill, I think you said if they have, or they may possibly have subs on our coast, but I think it's an actual fact. That
yes.
They routinely, the Russians have a base in Venezuela with their alliance with Chavez, so they routinely patrol our coast.
Well, my point wasn't not if they did it. I mean, so they did it, and they land these troops, and the troops have to manage to get from where they are to some place where they can actually commit some act, where they could do it by computer from far away without the submarine, and then you're assuming that if all these things went correctly, but at the same time, if we decided there were Chinese troops landing on our shore, you got 30 seconds to take your troops back to China before we level Beijing, Shanghai, and half the rest of the country, and it would be done. Now you've just started worldwide nuclear war.
Do you really think that we could hit Beijing and knock out China that quickly?
In theory, we
700 billion dollars a year on weapons and weapon systems. We're spending $300 billion a year during Reagan's...
But what does it matter? China and Russia have as many weapons as we do.
The point is not how many weapons you have. The point is that you could destroy the planet in less than 30 minutes. And what is accomplished? Who wins? Well, you're still fighting the 20th century war in the 21st century. The point is not war. The point is your planet's melting... And you're still acting like we should have a war with China?
No, that's not at all what we're saying.
If I may. I think, caller, you make a very good point.
Yeah, thank you for calling, Bill.
But I think it's not that we're advocating war first and foremost. We're advocating that we need to have stronger defenses in order to prevent a war. But the thing is that we do have the capability of wiping out Beijing with nuclear weapons, but that's why a first strike and our vulnerability to a first strike is so important. The Chinese, if they were to launch a first strike, we're not talking that – when I say they have the ability to land division-sized elements, I'm not talking about that's all they're going to do. If the Russians and the Chinese, because they have a mutual defense treaty and their militaries regularly hold joint operations together. In fact, actually, they recently, a couple weeks ago, held another big joint training operation together. If they were to launch a strike, and most likely they would do it simultaneously, what would happen is they would strike our nuclear installations and our airfields. And the immediate shock effect of that. And then if they landed troops to create a beachhead so they could bring in more troops by aircraft – we would be put into such disarray if any of our nuclear installations were left. I mean, bunker buster bombs would probably knock out a good portion of ours, and none of our forces are located strategically. That's another problem. None of our armed forces are located near any major cities.
In the United States.
Well, Marshawn,
why do you go into that, this whole notion of where the bases in the United States are and why that's one of our weaknesses.
Before you get to that, though, just to emphasize the overall point here is we don't want war. We want to end war by bringing our soldiers home because we're creating the environment for war by being in the Middle East.
Those who listen to In Context know that our philosophy is for a new foreign policy as well as a new military
non-intervention.
A new foreign policy of non-intervention. Let's return to the foreign policy of Washington and Jefferson that led this country to greatness in the first century and a half of the Republic.
I think people automatically are brainwashed and assume that just because we say we need strong defense, that means we want to take the fight to more people.
We're just the contrary. We want a redeployment. We want a new military policy.
We're peaceful 100% on this show. We do not want any war whatsoever, but we want a strong national defense because right now we are ripe for the picking.
Well, it's what Teddy Roosevelt
said. We're low-hanging fruit.
It's what Teddy Roosevelt said. Speak softly and carry a big stick. We have a call. This is Tony from Southampton, New York. Go ahead, Tony. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks. Well, I have a different slant on this.
Sure, go ahead.
We already are spending more than half of our national budget on military, half if you include the interest on the debt from the military operations. And we have people in the streets because we've neglected so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a greater danger is that what's going to happen domestically.
That's exactly what we're talking about. I'm not worried.
I'm more worried about that.
We do not have enough
submarines patrolling off the beach here. I live near the beach. And I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is we have
We understand the point.
Poverty.
Yes. Thank you, Tony. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
We have very limited time. We have to move on.
We get your point.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, it's actually, you make a very good point in terms of, the spending. We're not advocating more defense spending, but we're advocating a reallocation of defense spending.
This would save money by a big margin.
I think we want an overall reduction in military spending.
This is what it is. If we closed our 700 military bases around the world, if we stopped investing in these incredibly daft drones. And we stopped investing in these Land Warrior. We sunk something like $380 billion into Land Warrior system, which ended up after the nine, it was, we invested,
which is the tracked robot.
It's, well, it's a, that's another thing we invested billions in, but the Land Warrior system was like a total computerized
system.
Oh, yeah. And they field tested it after having spent close to 20 years on it. They scrapped it because it didn't work. Instead of investing in stuff like that, we could, an example being, harden our entire electrical grid against an EMP attack for $100 million.
Not only that,
and that's from Popular Science magazine.
It's not even just an EMP attack. It's just the sun, a coronal mass ejection that of a magnitude of, I think, over 10, which we get routinely them, or over 8. I think it's actually like 8.2 is what we recently had, and we actually lost GPS satellites because of it. If you had like an 8.9, it would actually cause a cascading effect of the eastern seaboard where we'd be without power for 2 months. All right, so that's what we have to do. We have to upgrade our power systems here, which would also protect our national defense.
But as our caller Tony said, we have a lot of poverty. We have a lot of problems in this country. And the idea of having a new foreign policy of non-intervention and a more modest military policy to go with it frees up billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to start to invest in infrastructure building in the United States to create good-paying jobs in a more competitive economy.
Exactly. I mean, like I say, it would take much less. We would spend much less on defense if we were just concerned with defending the homeland instead of building bridges in Afghanistan.
The stat I always bring up is the Pentagon burns 395,000 barrels of oil per day. All right, that's because we're overseas, not because we're patrolling our borders. You would use a tenth of that, or maybe a 20th of that on defense if we brought our soldiers home.
That's right.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, so exactly, that's the point. We want to stop spending war abroad. We want to stop stirring the hornet's nest, bring everybody home, and let's get back to building things here and protecting ourselves, because right now we are wide open.
Let me give out the phone number again, and I thank those callers, and we invite anybody to come in, whatever their point of view is, to join this conversation on America's military vulnerabilities and the need for a new military policy. The phone number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. Or drop us an email at ken@mdrtalk.org. One of the things we're trying to accomplish, at Gus and Marshawn and I, is to bring this whole idea of an informed discussion of military policy into the common discourse for Americans, because for so long we've been treated like dummies.
Yeah. You know what part of the problem is? I'm just kind of pissed off today, but our schedule, we're only on once a week, right, for an hour. So every week we speak to a new audience, just about.
Yeah.
People almost never know what we're talking about on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
We only have 1 hour to cover all these super complex issues. Last week and the week before, we covered how to rebuild America and all the problems here domestically. This week, we're talking military affairs, and people are saying, oh, but we have other problems, and the military is omnipotent and all-powerful.
In that context, we started with the problems last week, and the economic problems last week was economic solutions, and this week we're looking at the military. But all of our shows are archived at WPCAN, WPCAN.org, and they're also archived at our website, incontextreport.com.
Exactly. And we have a caller. This is Edwin from New Haven. Go ahead, Edwin. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Edwin.
Hi. Yes. You say that you're not advocating war, but in actuality, you are advocating war. And I'm saying that because when you develop these new weapons, generally the government wants to try them out. And who they try them out on? They try them out on some poor, defenseless people. Like when they developed this stealth bomber, they had to try it out. Bush went in and attacked Panama, okay? And then he has the audacity to talk about Saddam Hussein killing his own people. Aren't Panamanians Americans?
Well,
okay? 4,000 people were murdered in Panama.
It's true.
Because
it's true.
Well, you're right, Edwin.
I
agree completely with what you're saying. But that's where we need a new foreign policy as well.
Yes.
Because we need to completely turn around. We need a policy of defense, not a policy of offense.
Defense against who? Defense against what? You have the power, the ability to destroy the world 137 times.
Yes.
Who are you going to defend yourself against?
We haven't fought any real strong adversaries recently, but if we keep pushing for this global military hegemony all over the world, whether it's Africa or the Middle East, eventually one of these big players, and our target is the Russians and the Chinese. There's no question about it. Particularly the Chinese, we're trying to cut them off from access to oil. If we keep pushing them, eventually they may push back.
Thank you very much for your call, Edwin.
Thanks, Edwin.
But, you know, you can't be defenseless. You know, you can't. I mean, a country this large with this many resources cannot be defenseless. We're not Costa Rica.
And if
you know, we have things that are actually worth defending.
And if I can give some interesting information out there, for just food for thought, the Chinese right now, with the expanse of their expanding population, are running very short of food. They actually also have roughly 50-to-1 ratio men to women, if not greater. And they are looking at massive unemployment and eventual starvation of their entire population within the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So to them, our open expanses of land could be a very tempting target. Again, does it mean that this is going to happen?
They could be tough too. Look at Tibet.
But that's I'll get to that in just a moment. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean necessarily it's going to happen right now. But it could happen, and you don't want to leave yourself vulnerable, because if you have a lot of land, a lot of resources, eventually somebody's going to push back. And again, I've also heard the argument that this is the 21st century, those kind of things don't happen. People said that if you go back to the writings from the French and Indian Wars, the Hundred Years' War, they said there could never be another war in Europe like this because it was so devastating. Prussia, at the time, ran out of young men, so they ended up having to conscript people from other countries. They said there could never be another major war like this. It was so disastrous. Then, you know, you fast forward, you have the Franco-Prussian War as the next major war in Europe. And then fast forward to that, then you have the First World War. France loses a whole generation. Gas, chemical weapons, the worst war in human history. And then people said it was the Great War, the last war. Then we had the Second World War, which was even worse in many ways in terms of its atrocities than the First World War. So just look at history.
We went off the tracks in 1898.
And as you said, the problem is the foreign policy, you know, because the problem of invading Panama, it was not the fault of the stealth jet. It was the fault of the military-industrial complex needing an excuse to spend more money on the bullets to arm it. You know, so if you, it doesn't cost a lot of money to defend a country. It costs a lot
to wage
war.
That's right.
Invasions are extremely expensive,
and our chances of being attacked go way down if we assume a policy
of
non-interference, mutual respect for other nations.
Right.
A priority will be friendly relations and improved trade.
And
why wouldn't anybody attack us? Being
as vulnerable as we are, again, another thing we forget is, because I've also heard this argument that, you know, no one will ever invade us because every, you know, gangster in the cities and every redneck will take up a gun and they'll fight. If you want to look at the way the Chinese wage war, I mean, put it this way, a Russo-Sino invasion of the U.S. would look like the Soviet allied invasion of Germany. We'd be running to surrender to the Russians. And the reason being that if you look at the way the Chinese wage war, their invasion of Tibet being a perfect example, the atrocities they committed. If you ever get a chance, read the book 7 Years in Tibet. These are firsthand accounts of the war crimes committed by the Chinese in Tibet. They are unspeakable. Wiping out huge swaths of the population, forcing children to shoot their parents. And that's how they prevent an insurgency.
How about modern weather weapons, okay? They don't even have to come here with anybody. They just they have versions of HAARP like we have in Alaska, which can steer hurricanes. All right, they can do the exact same thing, causing earthquakes that'll split the United States in half if it came to that.
Well, that's true, too. Again, we are not...
And this is true. I'm not making this up. I swear this is true.
It's, in fact, well, actually...
That's raised by many callers that we've got this nuclear arsenal, so nobody's going to do anything to us because we could always nuke them.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the nuclear arsenal, again, being anachronistic in of itself, but the fact is that all of our nuclear facilities and all of our military installations are located out in the open. They're located in the most remote places of the country.
What about, was it Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado?
Oh, that's the command center for NORTHCOM. And even that, everybody knows where it is.
But isn't that so deep and hardened that it's actually our continuity of government site?
It's also a command center for all of North America. But it's great if they have all these computers that can see everything. But if they can't communicate with anyone because of first strike,
if they knock our satellites out, then we're done.
If they knock out our satellites, and this is all our satellites are controlled, all our nuclear weapons are guided by satellites. They knock out our satellites, our nukes can't launch. They launch an EMP attack, our communications go dead, and many of our nuke sites, in fact, most of them are not hardened against the EMP attack, our nukes literally won't take off. The fact is that if they successfully launch a first strike, because a first strike is not going to be a couple troops, it's not going to be a couple bombs, it'll be a total blackout of the United States. Nothing is taking off. So even if we wanted to use our nukes, nothing's moving.
And this war that we're talking about actually would not be that devastational because they wouldn't even use conventional weaponry. They wouldn't use nuclear weaponry. They would just use EMP weapons to knock out electronics, making everything just shut down. And we have space platform-based weapons. They're called meteor guns, where they put a small-sized conventional weapon on a Sabo rocket, which it uses gravitational pull and the rotation of the orbit to launch into a super speed and decapitate heads of state.
Now, these are not nukes, right?
No, these are not nukes.
Isn't my understanding correct, Marshawn?
But this is
that people are moving away from the nukes. But the great powers see that they're not practical because of the radiation. They can use these other methods.
The point is, though, that it's a platform-based weapon, and they use them as a countermeasure for launched nuclear weapons and other large-scale ICBMs, except that if they knock out our space platforms, this is the point, we have no defense against these weapons.
Our entire communications and navigational systems go down. Our JDAMs are all guided. Our big bunker buster bombs are all guided by satellite. They knock out our communications
network. If we're hit with a conventional weapon, would we respond with a huge thermonuclear attack?
That's the other thing. You know, in all reality, if, for whatever reason, we had the opportunity to utilize the bomb, we wouldn't use it. And this is the reason. We know that the retaliation against the United States would be so devastating. I mean, first of all, our military leaders know we're vulnerable. That's why they write articles saying we need to bolster our defenses. But if we were to launch, and assuming we could actually hit the Chinese too, because their air defense systems, especially the Russian S-300 surface-to-air missile system, let alone their latest and greatest, I think it's the S-400, it's coming out onto the production line now, might bring down our missiles before they hit Chinese soil. But we know
whether they
hit or not, the counterpunch that we would receive would be so devastating.
What about that Russian missile you showed me 2 months ago that we don't even have a countermeasure for, because once it's in launch and orbit, it breaks up into like 100 smaller missiles?
The Iskander, the Alexander.
Missile. How about that one?
That is a brilliant weapon. It was technology. It's stealth, and it's technology we worked on, you know, long ago. We just
multiple reentry rocket.
We worked on it a long time ago. It kind of, you know, again, we stopped investing in it, but the Russians and the Chinese kept investing in it. And the brilliance of it is that once it enters the upper atmosphere, so now it's too high to hit, and then when it reenters the atmosphere, it launches up to 7 or 8 multiple warheads at 7 or 8 different targets, and this is coming from one Iskander missile.
Yeah.
So imagine if they launched 3 or 4, that's 4 times 8 is...
24.
24, thank you. Math was never my strong
point.
That's 24 small missiles. And again, none of our military installations are located anywhere near the major cities.
And each with their own guidance and propulsion. It's not just a cluster bomb.
Exactly. Right. So if we knocked out their satellites, this would still be capable of making contact.
So why would you use a nuke if you could use, if you have a variety of other weapons?
And moreover, nukes are anachronistic, especially for hitting the United States, because my favorite example is we have Hurricane Katrina. We have every other hurricane and massive tornado that has ever hit the United States. And our emergency services become so blocked up with a small disaster. Now imagine if you were to see that on a larger scale, large incendiary explosives or a large bomb similar to the U.S. MOAB dropped on New York, Chicago, L.A., or any group of American major cities. FEMA couldn't handle, you know, Katrina. They're not going to be able to handle.
Here's a situation, all right? Just to try to paint the picture for everybody listening. Okay, we go to war with Iran and Syria. The mutual defense treaties kick in, Russia and China. Now they get involved. We're over there and we're threatening a full-on war where we're going to cut off the oil flow to China. They hit us. They knock out our satellites. They hit us with an EMP. And then they use a weather weapon to push a hurricane into the middle of the country, causes massive flooding. Now what do? We have to bring everyone home and we have to recover because there is no communication and there is no emergency relief. And now all of a sudden we're done for 6 months to a year.
And that's precisely why they would do that. And there was an article.
And it's over in a day.
And that's precisely why they would do it. Because why are the Russians and the Chinese? Russia has already said that if we attack Syria or Iran, they will deploy troops to their defense. And, you know, why is Russia going to expend 1 million men fighting Americans in the desert when they can plop a few bombs here? And moreover, again, an article in Popular Science, you know, I don't use fringe sources, folks. You can go, if you doubt what I'm saying, that's fine. Look it up. Popular Science had a great article on the potential for an EMP attack on the United States. And they covered things like, you know, how the Russians have launchers that are disguised as, you know, cargo ships, you know, that look like they're carrying those big metal tankers and it really holds a missile that can launch from the edge of our coast. But the fact is that Popular Science said that if there were an EMP attack, first of all, it would take only two EMP bombs to wipe out the entire electrical grid from the United States within 48 hours. Yeah, east and west. And within 48 hours, you would begin to have looting, and within a week, you would have mass starvation.
Yeah, we only have, 6% of the country is independent and actually able to grow food for themselves. So we've over 90% of the country is dependent on grocery stores being able to bring in fresh food.
That's why we're advocating a new defense policy. That's why we're advocating we have to, you know, this isn't just be frightened. This is, this is what we should be scared of, and this is what we should be trying to protect ourselves against. This is why we should be telling the government, don't invade Syria, don't invade Iran. This is avoidable. This is as avoidable as Germany's invasion of France. This is as avoidable as Japan's bombing of Pearl Harbor. This is avoidable. If we were the Japanese, if we were the Germans, I'm saying, it's as avoidable as any major war in
history.
This
doesn't mean that we'll be wide open for terrorist attacks and we have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. That's bunk. We fight them there and then they want to come here. So if we leave them alone and we stop intervening in all these countries' private affairs, they won't have any reason to avoid attack us, which is why Switzerland's never been invaded.
We only have about 6 minutes left, so let me give out the phone number so that people could get one or two calls in before we sign off. It's 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. We're talking about America's military vulnerabilities, about the need for a new military policy in the context of a new foreign policy as well.
And one thing I want to address that I don't think I quite got to address earlier, which was the problem with our borders being porous. If we bring our troops home, if we secure the homeland, if we set these defenses, if we secure our borders, terrorists won't be able to get in. Because if somebody really wanted to get into the United States, blow something up, they could cross across the Mexican border. I've been on the Mexican border many, many times myself. It is very, very, very porous. And the fact is that I read the KGB training manual many years ago, and I got it off of Amazon. It had been translated into English. Brilliant book if you get the chance to read it. But one of the things it advocated was that in the event of war with NATO, what the plan of the KGB was to sneak special forces shortly before the outbreak of war, or even up to a year before the outbreak of war, across the border. And then their job was the day or so of before or hours before the outbreak of war, they were to sabotage communication lines, power lines, and actually sneak onto military installations and kill pilots while they were sleeping. And now our military installations, we have...
And we know there's Russian spies here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're constantly being caught. And they've been here since like 25 years
ago. I don't think
ago.
People appreciate how much we're pushing them. Because we're fed this bunk from the American media. I mean, Libya.
Yeah,
why did we take over Libya?
Invaded by who?
Libya was a key Russian ally. That's why we bombed Libya and took it over.
Yeah.
Syria and Iran, Russian allies. We bombed them. Eventually, these guys aren't going to take it lying down.
We're knocking down their friends one at a time in order to get to them.
Right. And the thing is, the Russians have a. This is what you have to understand, folks. This is like this build up to World War I. History repeats itself. Syria has a mutual defense treaty with Iran. Iran has a mutual defense treaty with Russia. Russia has a mutual defense treaty with China. Russia holds a mutual defense treaty with Cuba, Venezuela, and Bolivia. What does this all mean? This means if we attack Syria, it is considered the same as if Iran attacked Turkey. It is an attack on all, the same way an attack on one NATO country is an attack on all NATO countries.
Article 5 was what was used. The NATO treaty was used to get us into Afghanistan.
Yeah, but if the fight really comes here and we get knocked out we'll see who our friends are. Yeah, I guarantee you nobody comes to help.
Yeah, I don't think NATO will be around.
No, Britain may send some ships with some food on it, but that's it.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Yeah, the rest of the world will forget us very, very quickly.
Well, you know,
they'd say, thank God.
We've got a mindset here at In Context, which American public policy should be controlled by you and me, and it's controlled now by multinational corporations. Whether it's defense policy, military policy, economic policy, healthcare policy, environmental policy, food policy, it's all controlled by corporations to maximize their short-term interests. And what we want to do in the show is provoke you to think critically about all of the areas of public policy and what's in the best interest of you and me, not what's in the best interest of, say, defense contractors or oil companies.
Exactly. What we need is, again, you know, I always say this, but people ask me, you know, are you Republican, Democrat, conservative, or liberal? And I say I'm a nationalist. Mm-hmm. I want to see a America where we are concerned about our security first, not anyone else's. I want to see a country where our foreign policy, our interests come first, not those of any other country. I want to see an America where we are worried about the safety, about the welfare, about jobs for our citizens.
And you know, if we are safe and we have a strong defense, then that means that we'll be able to reach out and help in humanitarian ways, other countries who are struggling to make it, the ones who really want to adopt something like our Constitution to allow for individual liberties so that people can pursue their own pursuit of happiness.
And this is a foreign policy that's been shared by Democrats and Republicans, especially during the early years of the Republic. What are you talking, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, or much more recently, there were a great Republican Senator Robert Taft, who was for a policy of non-interference. It was only in the aftermath of World War II that this foreign policy of non-interference, of friendly relations with everybody, of trying to build a better world, was subordinated to military expansionism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway, so the website is incontextreport.com. Make sure you get us on YouTube with youtube.com/incontextreport. Be sure to like us on Facebook, and follow our articles coming up soon. We're going to be covering this issue a lot more in depth, and we're going to talk more about rebuilding America's defenses. Are we going to do an episode on specifically on EMP? What are we going to do next?
I think definitely one addressing EMPs would be phenomenal, because that's something that is not very well understood in America. But there's a website I'd like to put out if you're interested in the EMP threat. Again, I encourage you. I have no doubt in what I am telling you because I have researched it, and I encourage you to research it. Go to EMP Act America. I believe it's empactamerica.com. If not, Google EMP Act America, and the website should come up. It's a tremendous amount
because
of
one of the callers said that the electronic war is the future, and that we're still talking about a 20th century war. And you know, we're not, but he's right and wrong at the same time, because you need to have conventional defenses, but at the same time, you have to think future-proof and make sure that you are protected. But the non-physical electronic threat, you have to protect yourself against that. But that's only your first wave of defense. You protect yourself electronically so that you don't ever have to be confronted with conventional weapons.
Exactly. Because like the Six-Day War, again, you know, the Six-Day War being one of my favorite examples, if you look at the Six-Day War, you will see that what happens when new technology comes out. They launch strikes using electronics. They launch strikes using all sorts of great, you know, jamming equipment and stuff like that. But it still ultimately devolves down to the boots on the ground. This is In Context, and we will be on the air.
Oh, no, we won't be on next week, right?
Right. It's that we're on every Monday from noon to 1, except the first Monday of the month.
Right, so no show next week.
We'll be on
you guys get a break from us.
IncontextReport.com. We're also on YouTube, right, guys?
YouTube.com/IncontextReport, and like us on Facebook as well.
And going out with Won't Get Fooled Again.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
See ya.